Welcome back, listeners, to another exciting episode of Built to Lead, the podcast that brings you inspiring stories from visionaries, leaders who are shaping the future of healthcare. Today, we have the honor of introducing an exceptional guest, William Jones, the founder of Linac Medical. With a passion for working with teams that tackle complex challenges, William brings a unique and curious blend of engineering expertise and healthcare business experience to the forefront of his work. As the founder of the startup Linac Medical, an angel-funded pre-seed startup headquartered in Ottawa, Canada, focused on the design and commercialization of hardware and software aimed at improving the delivery of primary care for cancer patients. William is on a mission to revolutionize oncology care in community and primary care settings. Beyond his professional pursuits, he actively contributes to his community and Linac, exemplifying his commitment by fostering curiosity through innovation. Hailing from Niagara Falls, William's journey took an unexpected turn at the young age of 17, shaping his perspective on life and driving his determination to make a meaningful impact in the healthcare field. Navigating his career in Ottawa and Toronto, he has gathered invaluable insights and experiences that have guided him in his pursuit of transforming healthcare delivery. We are thrilled to have William on the podcast today to learn more about his innovative approach to patient-focused care, curiosity, and how he is using his unique background to shape the future of healthcare. So, William, let's dive in and gain some valuable insights from you as a visionary leader. Welcome, William.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And really excited to be here and learn more about this podcast and listen to other episodes too. It's really phenomenal what you guys are doing.
Thank you so much. So let's kick it off. Like, in your opinion, what makes a good rebel?
Oh, that's a tough question. You know, rebel often, I guess, has a negative connotation to it, right? And so I guess what comes to my mind first is values, what's really important. You know, I have a young child right now at home. So I think, do I want to instill curiosity and help foster curiosity, or do I want to help instill being a rebel and not always listening to the way things go? And right now I'm focused on values. And I think values are really important to get right. And having a good set of values, then when you go to be a rebel, you know, you can be a rebel in a good way in saying this process isn't working. And I think what rebel means to me is recognizing something that doesn't make full sense for our society and saying, starting to challenge it and go, well, why are we doing it that way?
Yeah, well, I think that's good. And I know I'm not a father myself, but even just knowing kids, I think kids are born as rebels. They're born curious. So, yeah. For example, like you put them, like you, as you talked about, you want that good rebel, that good curiosity. You put a child in their bed, for some reason, they want to swiggle around or find their way somewhere else. So they're kind of rebelling of where you put them. At the same time, they're being curious because it's a world that they're trying to learn more about. And that's pretty much our topic for today, curiosity. And when we look at curiosity, we're trying to figure out what exactly is curiosity. So curiosity drives innovation by encouraging us to explore new ideas and question the norm. It sparks fresh perspectives and fighting conformity. It's a thirst for learning, change, and embracing feedback that helps us grow. And we learned from your bio that Linac is a startup company you founded. And first of all, congratulations on this new venture. I believe this just started about 7 months ago, and you're having a pretty, looks like a successful 2023. So you and your team have won a bunch of awards, been accepted into a prestigious program like Mars, Fast Lanes. You're now a federally backed medical device startup company. And I can't forget to add Venbridge, a top 5 Ottawa startup in 2023. So there's probably something I am missing, but it looks like you guys are primed to be trailblazers. You're primed to be good rebels in the system as you're looking towards the future. So maybe can you just start about talking about what led you to start the company? We want to maybe talk about the name itself, because I think I'm curious to know more about that. And then how do we go from a French physician to Linac? So maybe talk about that and then what sparked.
Yeah, great question. So I'll start with the name. And the name, you know, I tried to start a company a few years ago and I got hung up on the name. And 4 months later, I'm still trying to figure out the name. And, you know, that doesn't matter. It at this stage of the company, at any startup, there's a little bit of importance to it, but especially for a medical device company that's not going to be on the market for another few years, the name is the least important thing that you should be focused on. And I mean, it wasn't a med device that I was looking at back then, but still it didn't matter. And it took me time to learn that. And I actually, in all these ecosystems I'm a part of, I speak with a lot of founders, and I see some of them really spinning their wheels, especially those with more than one founder, on what the name should be. And it bothers me because, you know, you can always change the name later. And I was part of a startup where we hired a consulting firm and they did a phenomenal job at renaming the company. And you know, we're further along. There's a lot more employees. There was millions of dollars in the company at that point. But we weren't on the market yet, and we had the time to do it. And yeah, there's a lot more like legalese that you need to go through and make that work, but you can do it. You're not the first person to do it. And so that was an important part of where Laneck came from is, you know, whatever is the first sort of thought area that I want to be part of, that's where I should go. And I always want to pay homage to the scientists that came before me. I have a huge interest in just historical science, and not so much remembering names and facts and figures, but more about where did things come from? You know, like that really fascinates me, especially when it comes to science. Because when you think about it, you know, we go home and watch Netflix. There was people that, you know, they didn't have any of this stuff. And so they would go home from their day job at, say, the patent office, like, you know, one famous scientist out there. And they would go home and start working on their own curiosity of, you know, why is the stars up in the earth the way that, or above in the sky the way they are, right? And so I just have an insane curiosity of where science came from. And, you know, where Laneck's device really is centered on is the stethoscope. And I started to think, where did the stethoscope come from? And Dr. René Laneck was the French physician who was also a musician. And he had a patient that was a bit larger, and he couldn't hear. The common way to hear a heart back then was to put your ear to the chest. And remembering his childhood and seeing kids put like sort of like a straw or a roll of paper to something to hear, you know, the sound coming through the reverberations of something vibrating on the ground, he rolled up papers that he had in his hand, and he could hear the heart. And then right there, that sparked the idea of the stethoscope. And, you know, with the name Laennec, that's his last name. I find it hard. I think it'd be hard for a lot of, you know, North American, I'll say, Western cultures to figure out how to pronounce Laneck. And so I thought, well, what's another way to do it is to get the phonetic spelling of it. So quick Google search, you see the phonetic spelling, and then, Laneck is right there for the taking. And most beneficial in all of today's world is the all the socials and everything was wide open, which was great. For the second part of the question, I know that was a long-winded answer. For the second part of the question, you know, you said 7 months ago I started the company, and that's true. I incorporated, but my taste for entrepreneurship really came when I got a co-op at Sunnybrook Hospital, or the Sunnybrook Research Institute, with a doctor there who's a clinician, entrepreneur, scientist. You know, he does everything. Dad, he does everything. Ambitious person and very inspiring. And since 2013, I've been wanting to start a company. So, you know, all the success of 2023 looks great, you know, for 7 months, but it's actually like 10 years of me reading and practicing and doing things and just talking to people and earning experience at different companies, startups, Fortune 500, et cetera, that culminated into this point of going, you know, now's the right time in my life to go do it. And that's sort of where it started and where the success came from is just years of building up experience.
It's a fantastic example of when we say, you know, sometimes it's all about the right place at the right time and putting all those experiences together to then come up with this novel thing that you want to then introduce to the market. So I love that story. Thanks for sharing.
Even just going back to the inception of the stethoscope, and you just talked about how it does take time over, let's say, 10 years. So you're not just a flash in the pan, like 7 months, all of us on the success. The same way going back to Laneck, it probably wasn't, he's a flute maker. The first stethoscope he made probably wasn't the final product that he made, started off with. And just hearing that, how that it inspired you, I think that's amazing. Just talking about how even your internship inspired you, like 10 years of that research to kind of get to this stage now. And even just going back to Rebel Talent, Francesco Gino talks about how we express curiosity is usually rooted in our childhood and the lessons we're taught and is shaped as we grow. So how has curiosity fostered during your formative years, and how does that translate to your current personal and professional life? So even just thinking about the why and how your company started, how did your early experiences be the impetus for that?
Yeah, excellent question. And Dr. Erlinek, for example, he was a rebel in a good way, because actually he invented the stethoscope. He refined it, like you said, from paper to a more polished design, and even then it's been iterated since then to be the modern form that we see today. But a lot of people in the science community and the physician community said, we don't need to do it this way. Like, let's just stick with the old way. And so he had to be a rebel and really push through and get that message heard out there that there's a better way to auscultate. So for the second part of that, curiosity for me, it really stems from, it's kind of a personal story. My dad passed in 86, a few months before I was born. And so my mom had two kids under three, and then me in the oven, I guess you would want to say, in the womb. And so I was born, and I was born into a world where, my mom really instilled strong values in me, but at the same time didn't have much time. She had to go find a job. She had to go raise three kids now. You sort of were left on your own to go figure, not left on your own, but you had to go figure things out for yourself. You weren't spoon-fed, this is how the financial markets work, or this is how you buy a house, or this is how you invent something. And so it was just me. I remember one of my friends on my street, all we did was just, we'd find some wood and put things together. We'd find old motors, we'd put stuff together, and we'd just play around and do stuff. And nothing ever turned of it, but it just sort of fostered that ability to iterate and experiment. And it's as simple as, you don't even need tools or anything, but it was as simple as building a snow hill on someone's driveway to then go, well, what if we actually made it, one of us has a snowboard, we made it a little higher, we made a turn, and maybe made a jump, right? So you're just constantly iterating and feeding off ideas. And like we were talking about at the start of the podcast, having a team is really important to help really feed off ideas in that curiosity space. So I think for me, it's just not having that second parent there, and just seeing a void of, wanting to, just a thirst to go explore the world.
Thank you so much for sharing that story, William. As you potentially, go through different experiences in your life, my question to you is, as a leader in the space now, how do you remain curious? And how do you encourage curiosity within the spaces that you're in and for the people that you work with, such as your employees and teammates?
It can be tough. It really depends on I'd say two things: the company, the stage of the company, and then the stage of the project that your employees are working on. And I'm going to talk about projects rather than organizational curiosity. You can have curiosity from a, why don't we have more of this within the organization? And you can go explore that. And I encourage my employees to do that. I often do that from I'm thinking about less of my startup and more from my past experiences. With my employees, I would say, we're in marketing. This is the world that we live in. Go out in the field and work with sales. Go work with clinical. Go work with the research team. Go on the manufacturing floor and just, have lunch with the people. Because if you don't hear what their problems are, or what their successes are, or why things, what problems they're facing, you won't be able to go out in the field and speak to physicians and say, well, this is why the device is made the way it is. That thing that you don't like, it's actually like this because when you go to manufacture it, this they have trouble doing this. And so if you don't have that curiosity to go explore other departments, you're not going to be that well-rounded product manager, for example, or that well-rounded financial analyst, even, that understands why that line item is the way it is and why the COGS are so high on that product line. So I think that's a really important part.
And it becomes particularly more important in healthcare, right? When we think about even software as a medical device, or any other form of technology that comes into the space, being sure that you're able to interact with clinicians, patients, and other stakeholders who are probably potentially going to be your end users becomes even more critical, because you might not be in their shoes in order to understand what their workflow looks like. Can you speak a little bit on that aspect of it too?
Yeah. So, sorry. Do you mind repeating that question?
Yeah, for
Sorry, I was
sure.
singing.
So when we think about the space and we think about healthcare in general, and we think about who it interact, what our technology interacts with, the end users, can you speak a little bit about that patient, clinician, and other stakeholder engagement that you see within your work?
Yeah. So, you know, what's really important is having curiosity and understanding the situation and understanding who's using it and who the customer is. Those are critical. And I talked about the small company and big company stage of the project, et cetera. So those are also important. So if you're a startup, you have a bit more leeway to be curious, but you also have tight timelines. And within a large organization, it's tougher to be curious because we're trying to hit quarterly markers, et cetera. We have already annual strategic plans. Here's what the projects are. I kind of don't care what your ideas are for how we could improve something because we already set forth our money to be part of these projects going forward. So it's tougher in bigger companies to be curious. And then that relates to the comment you mentioned about the physician and how they're using it. It's really important to understand where you can ask questions and when you can ask questions during a procedure, for example, or during a meeting with a physician, and what stage that device is even at, right? So is it early on in the prototype development where you're going to be asking a lot more of those questions? Is it later on, and maybe you're not asking those questions, but you're observing it, taking notes, and then feeding it to the engineering team? And you don't want to point out on a commercial level when you're launching this multi-million dollar product, Dr. Schmeckley, like, what do you think about that? Do you think we should change that? You're going to have a whole organization that's going to be furious with you, right? So like, you kind of have to pick your moments of where you can be curious, and you can always be curious, but it's where you vocalize it and how you frame things that are really important.
Earlier on, you were sharing how, you know, curiosity was instilled to you at a very young age, going out into the world and exploring the different spaces. You got a chance to, you know, just touch things, smell things, be a part of them, and just figure things out. Now, the opposite of that is when, you know, sometimes when curiosity might not be encouraged. Can you talk about an experience or a story where you've perhaps been in an environment where curiosity was not encouraged, and how did that affect your innovative thinking and productivity in that space?
Yeah, there's two instances I think might be able to help relate to your audience. Is one is right now as a startup, you know, I have a deadline that I need to hit by a certain month coming up, and I'm past the curiosity stage. I'm in the execution stage. And when I have an employee or someone, a leader coming in and saying, what if we did it this way with this, you know, this component? That's great. Maybe for the future, we can look at that. But we really need to deliver on today and get to that milestone. Otherwise, there's, you know, financial implications. So I think that's really important. Is it's not that you're telling your employees or whoever not to foster innovation. It's just not the right time right now. So let's solve what we need to solve. And then that we can tackle that. You know, take your curiosity and apply it in the future. Another time is in a bigger company, which is more probably relatable to the Canadian market when you're working at a big conglomerate, et cetera. It's when there's political changes in the organization. Politics is everywhere. You know, I have so many friends that I want to leave this company and I want to go work here. They don't know what they're doing. You know, politics is everywhere. It's part of working in a team and an organization. And when there's big shifts, especially at the leadership level, that's where curiosity can be not fostered or encouraged because everyone wants to keep their pecking order and their sort of stance within people's minds. And you don't want to cause the wrong question that goes, well, why are they asking about that? That's more money, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think those are two instances when you have a tight deadline and when you have a change in political hierarchy. Those are two instances that are really important to, you know, understand that you're not being told not to be curious. It's just you need to be careful about how you vocalize the curiosity and maybe apply it later on.
Absolutely. And it kind of touches back into the place of, you know, time and place, being at the right place at the right time and understanding the strategic goals. So creating a culture of curiosity in the workplace really unlocks the potential for positive change and reveals the hidden strengths of candidates who excel when faced with new challenges. And that's what a lot of people are trying to look for and be in. But it all really depends on the stage that the company is at and what the strategic goals are.
And even just thinking about there's a time and place, as you mentioned, and then how do we find that balance? So even just thinking of our Built to Lead, team, I think our culture of experimentation has helped us along the way. This is the fourth season now that we're recording, so I think it's pretty amazing just to see that change. But as you talked about, there is times when curiosity may not be the best thing. You want to find that balance, which is important. I like the idea of harnessing your workplace innovativeness by creating a culture of curiosity. I also think this is a good point in the conversation to end this episode. In the next episode, William will continue his discussion on using creativity as a rebel talent. We will also explore two articles on how we can improve this skill as healthcare leaders. We can't wait for you to join us for part two of this very interesting conversation. Thank you for listening today, and thank you for joining us on Built to Lead Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Built to Lead is created and hosted by Matthew Goldburn
and co-hosted by Mubin Lalani.
Built to Lead is a companion podcast to the Vernissage Health Dialogue Series at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation at the University of Toronto.
Tell us what you thought about this week's episode. You can find us on LinkedIn at Vernissage Health and on Instagram at Vernissage Health. You'll find both of these in the episode description. Today's episode was produced by
Dheeraj Thakur,
Matthew Goldburn, with music composed by Sindhu.
A special thanks to Wendy Nelson, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation. Until next time.